Good morning. Welcome to Mesa City Council study session for Thursday, December 9th. First item on our agenda today is to review the agenda for the council meeting coming up next Monday. Items 3A and 4A. Items 4B through 4F.
Oh. It's too early for me.
We're there? Okay. 4B through 4F.
Yeah.
Items 4G through 5C. Items 5D through 7A.
Sorry, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, Ed.
Item 4H, we put on there as a placeholder, hoping to have it ready for Monday. We are going to hold that until January.
Okay, so 4H is off the agenda?
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you.
Remove item 4H.
Why are we removing 4H?
The placeholder.
Why? It was a question, why?
Yeah.
Councilmember yeah. Summers having a heart attack over 4H.
So no.
Get it? Defibrillators?
Yeah. I'm having heartburn.
Okay. We were still going through the evaluation of each of the proposals, and we'd asked for best and final offer, and so
you're not ready, no.
We're not ready, so it wouldn't make the get all the documents ready for this meeting, but it'll be on the for January, and so we're moving forward with it.
Once again, 5D through 7A. Councilman Richens?
Probably need to have some kind of review on 6A. I think 6B we talked about a little bit already, so everybody's comfortable with the normal and usual stipulations on council use permits. It's B.
Mr. Wesley.
It's Mayor and Council. Item 6A, it's Z1032. It's an existing pawn shop on 740 East Main Street. They are expanding in some to the adjacent tenant space within that shopping center. They have previously not had a council use permit because they have been in existence prior to the requirement for council use permits for pawn shops. Because of the expansion, they're now in applying for that council use permit. The stipulations that are put on here are similar to ones that we had for other pawn shops in terms of no adult material, stipping the council use permit to the specific business. A little bit different here, they currently do some work with firearms, and so their operation plan says that they will still continue to pawn firearms, but they will not display them for sale or resale within the facility. Also, they are making some site improvements as a part of the review of this. This is at the northwest corner of Main and Horn. There's a driveway right on Horn just north of Main that really doesn't function very well. You turn right into parking spaces when you come in. They've agreed to close off that driveway. They're also adding some landscape area along Main Street as part of the improvements to the site.
Councilmember Higgins?
I didn't understand your when you explained the firearm portion. Can you say that again? I missed a word, and it didn't make any sense.
They will still, people can still bring firearms in to pawn and receive that transaction, but they won't be displaying them for whatever reason. Person never comes back to redeem the firearm. They will send it to some other store for resale. They will not display and sell them
at this point. Great, thank you.
Councilmember Richens?
I just want to confirm that the stipulation for it goes only with the owner, it's not split because of the new site and the old site.
The whole facility will run with the owner.
Yeah, basically we're taking a grandfathered facility and we're bringing the entire facility, expansion and existing, under compliance under the new rules.
That's correct.
With carryover of the restrictions, and basically in order to get this, the owner has agreed to certain improvements to the site. Okay? Any other questions? Okay. And 6, did you have a further question on 6B, Dave?
I think we addressed that. The applicant that was there at the time had agreed to that running with the land. So I think we're okay there for
all
both
right.
of those to stay on consent agenda.
Okay. And 6A for introduction, we're going to leave that on consent also?
Yes.
Okay. 7B through 7G. Councilmember Fenter.
I'd like to take off 7E. I've made those previous comments and look forward to meeting with staff. Have some other questions that have come up, so appreciate the information.
Okay, for now, 7E is off consent. Yeah, Councilmember Richens.
I wanted to highlight the Project 7D that's happening on Country Club. It's a really cool project. John, can you help out just a little bit with that one? It's worth highlighting what's going on there.
It's an existing apartment complex that they are renovating and upgrading. And one of the primary things they're doing is providing shade structures for the parking spaces for the tenants. But and along with that, they are adding solar collectors on top of the shade structures to provide some of the power needs of the facility. The reason it's in here for a rezone is the under the old ordinance, they could have the multifamily in the C2. Current zone doesn't allow that, so they're having to rezone to go with the tenant improvements. But it's been very exciting, very good to work with them to make these types of improvements to the apartment.
Good. Thank you. Okay, items 3B through 8A. 3B, Ed.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Council members, 3B is a liquor license for Cafe Roma. We are actually, staff is recommending that the council recommend denial to the liquor board. The applicant filed an application with the liquor board. We did our processing, but they have not paid their application fee yet. We have been unable to reach them at any of the contact numbers, and we've been unable to reach them at the business. So we're not exactly sure what's going on with the business. But at this point, we're up against the deadline to get a response to the liquor board. So at this point, we are recommending that council recommend denial.
Okay. Any questions? All right.
Thank you.
And so we pulled that off of we have two choices. We could either change that and put on consent as a recommended.
We just want to bring it to your attention, but if you want to put on consent for denial, we can always do that.
Any objections to that?
Okay.
Why don't we change that and put it on back on consent with the recommendation of denial?
Yeah, we'll have to work on the language, yeah.
Okay. Deb, is that okay?
Yeah, let's change the language to make sure it says denial.
Okay.
Councilman. And if they come forward with information that leads us to believe there was some error in whatever, we would reconsider that.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. I think we're just concerned that whether they're even going to be doing business there. That seems to be dark.
Okay. Thank you.
I would also have a little bit of worry if we've gone down this far along the road and they haven't. I have a little bit of concern that someone shows up at the last second and says, oh, we want to.
Yeah.
I would probably still say we would recommend, I would support recommending denial just because I don't, at this point in time, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in somebody who hasn't done their work and given them a liquor license. So let the state board decide what to do with that.
We'll let you know on Monday what's happened.
All righty. Okay. Next item is to hear a presentation discuss the Arizona Museum for Youth Friends Achievements.
Good morning, Mayor, Council Members.
Ms. Brooks, welcome.
Thank you. It's been a while since I've been here. I am Corinne Brooks. I am the incoming president of the Friends of the Arizona Museum for Youth Board. Our museum was established by Jack and John Whiteman. It is the original children's art museum in the United States. It's the first children's museum in Arizona. In 1987, we became a partnership with the city. The mission of the Children's Museum is to inspire children of all ages to experience their world differently through art, creativity, and imagination. Since 2005, the Friends have raised $680,000 for the museum. The partnership with the city has truly helped us in remodeling in supporting us through the years. The gallery shop brings in some revenue that we share with the city. We have a staff called gallery educator staff that the Friends fund. It is not, they are not only educators, but they are concerned and stand by the safety and security of the museum, and they are an integral part of the staff of the museum. The partnership that we have with the city is very important because you do support us. We have had exhibitions that you have all participated in one way or another, and we thank you all for that. We have to keep the museum current, and which we are doing. And as you know, the new exhibition is a project with NASA and the Smithsonian. Thank you.
Good morning, Councilman and Mr. Mayor. I'm Carmen Guerrero. I've lived in Mesa for the last 30 years. I'm honored to serve on the board as its vice president. I'm here to tell you that our museum has made great achievements. We have done the renovations of Artville and Art Zone. In the middle of Art Zone, we have a concept block activity that helps the brain development of children 0 to 4 years old. This is crucial to their stimulation and invitation to use their creative muscle. Our membership has increased dramatically in the last 5 years from 200 to 1,000 member families. And as you see in the graph, most of our members come from Mesa, and over 50% of our membership are from the East Valley, although we have visitors from all over the valley, all over the metropolitan area. We're very pleased to know that our membership has increased, and we continue serving the children of the East Valley. Our Friends board has also increased from 8 to 16 active members. We're hoping to have a full board of 18 by February of 2011. We would like to thank Mr. Finter for being there and serving us and helping us. Our attendance is up, and we have been given the denomination of the best children's museum 6 times by the New Times, so we're very proud of that. We have also been able to up our sponsorships. We have developed great working relationships with the Commission, with M&I Bank, with Boeing, who has funded our Jump to Japan exhibition, and we continue looking for new sponsors and new ways, innovative ways to partner and create new exhibitions. This exhibition of NASA came from the SITES, which is the Smithsonian Museum, and it's the second time we collaborate with them, and the most important thing that we do for these exhibitions are the interactive that are crucial for the future development of our museum. So we thank you for your for your help, for your support, and we hope to continue serving our families here in the East Valley.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Duff. I'm a native of Mesa, and I'm a recent friend to the Arizona Museum for Youth. The reason I joined is my enthusiasm by visiting the museum, in which, as an adult, I could imagine and create with my mind, bringing me back to childhood, which is so key in how we conduct ourselves in our lives today. AMI takes a stand as we move into the 21st century to nurture young minds to innovate and imagine. Tomorrow's possibilities in play today are the Artville Learning Lab and EduCare, developing our image for the future through branding our name as the only children's museum focused on art. Our executive director, Sonny O'Rourke, has recently been accepted into the next class of the Virginia G. Piper Charitable Trust Fellows. She will be conducting her research on the best practices for traveling exhibitions. Besides her grant, AMI will receive funds to develop and qualify to apply for $50,000 to implement the project. The Virginia G. Piper Charitable Trust is a prestigious foundation, and the grants are highly competitive. We are proud of acquiring this grant to benefit the future of our organization. Traveling exhibitions are another way for us to diversify our revenue. We are integrating technology interactives and partnerships, creativity in the new economy. Creativity is the path to our future economically and culturally. A recent study reviewed in Newsweek, The Creativity Crisis, revealed the correlation to lifetime accomplishment was more than three times stronger for childhood creativity than childhood IQ. It also rated creativity as the number one skill needed for leadership for the future. Mesa is the place for children to build their history, reinvest their talents, and creative ideas in our community. We also support HEAT, City Strategic Plan, and look forward to partnering with others in arts and culture and the city with Mesa Takes Flight, Wing It, All Things That Fly. We are connecting with Downtown Mesa Light Rail as a destination. We'll be enhancing our exterior as fun and friendly, reflecting what's inside. Our atrium is utilized for facility rentals, for revenue, and as a creative center. We've hosted the form-based code workshop, the police department volunteer event, Mesa Association of Hispanic Citizens, fundraisers, and parties. In collaboration with the Mesa Historical Museum and our sponsors, the Playball exhibition returns this year. Also on agenda is the Charles Schultz Peanuts at Bat this summer. The Arizona Museum for Youth is a partnership with the City of Mesa, Arizona Museum for Youth Friends, sponsors, staff, interns, and volunteers serving member families and visitors as a collaborative of all tomorrow's possibilities. That concludes our presentation. Are there any questions?
Councilmember Fenter.
Thank you. I just wanted to express my appreciation to the Friends of AME board. A tremendous amount of work and time that goes into making this organization, the AME Cultural and Arts Facility, just a wonderful success. Uncompensated, hard work, passion. I'm able to watch from a kind of a fiscal conservative side and see some of the innovation, the hundreds of thousands of dollars that the citizens of Mesa, they've been saved that money by the good work that's done here. They've been under some very difficult circumstances and reorganizing, using volunteer labor. I'm just awed at how flexible and the ability to try and to work through these situations. But absolutely a tremendous asset for Mesa, and your work is truly appreciated. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you. I've had the privilege of serving on the Friends Board in the past for at least 8 years and probably more. And as I reflect back, I'm being shadowed by Mesa leadership person today. And my first introduction to the Museum for Youth was in Mesa leadership, and then shortly, and that's when I first met Corinne Brooks, wife of Mayor Al Brooks, and this partnership between the Friends and the city really was due to great foresight and leadership by Mayor Brooks, and that partnership has forged amazing dividends throughout the years for the community. As many of you know, I've had the opportunity to serve on state and national arts boards, and I've had the opportunity to travel around the state and around the country, and one thing that was a common theme of when I would tell people I'm from Mesa, they said, "Oh, AME, we know about that." And I was on a National League of Cities committee meeting in Nashville, and the chair of our committee was so proud to show us off the new Frist Museum in Nashville. And I'm walking around and keep thinking, they had a place for kids on the second floor, and I thought, well, this really looks familiar. And the docent came up and said, "Oh, where are you from?" And I'm from Mesa. "Oh, well, that's where we went to learn how to do this stuff." And so it really is a gem, but it's a very unique public-private partnership. And I know that I've been a member for a lot of years, and I'm so pleased the membership has grown. But it really is a great facility, and one that that is recognized really around the country and even around the world for the innovation that they do So it's something that I think we in the community can be very, very proud of. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Richens.
I'll just pile on here. My family is about the age demographic that this museum targets. And we went to the NASA exhibit recently, and my kids just had so much fun at that that we actually became members that night of the museum so they could go more often. And so anybody that has kids, you know, the ages of mine, you know, 10 and below or even a little older, please join this museum because your kids will just have a rich experience. And I can't say enough good things about how the staff interacted with the kids and how the kids were able to interact with the art. It was just a really neat experience. And just to watch my kids walk out of there with such a love for the ideas that were being presented there, it knew that you guys had really struck the right chord. You guys were doing what your mission was all about. So I just wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you. Just to sort of reiterate, not all the positives, these things are important parts of our community. Community isn't whole without having the whole package, and this is an important part. These are not frivolous or, worthless things. They go into creating the soul of community, so I appreciate your passion and your work. I'd also like to just agree and follow up or expand on what Councilman Finter said, because I think that most people don't realize the serious impact our financial crisis has had on our cultural and arts, and especially our museums. And the fact that our staff and volunteers have come together to put on such incredible displays and exhibits, and to continue on with such a huge reduction in resources has been commendable. And it amazes me that when you walk in, you would never know that we're basically in many ways, you know, keeping some of these things together with baling wire and doing a great job of it. So you're to be commended, and the staff also for really doing yeoman's work and keeping a treasure for our community, not only together but having it excel in really difficult times. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your support.
Okay. Next item on the agenda, discuss and provide directions on, what is that? Fireworks ordinance. Ms. Spinner, I'm going to turn it over to you real quick because I think we're going to just fill in some gaps here. And if you could explain to us the ordinance, or Al, if you could do that, and just what we're trying to, or what you were accomplishing or putting forward in that ordinance, specific ordinance, and how it relates to what we currently have.
Okay. And Mayor and Council, I'm going to ask Alfred Smith to respond to the questions.
Mayor, as you're currently aware, before the state legislature passed this new law, all fireworks prohibited use and sale were prohibited in the state of Arizona. The state legislature enacted a statute to basically allow for the sale of permissible consumer fireworks within the state of Arizona, but allowed a provision giving cities a right to ban the use of permissible consumer fireworks.
Regulate the use of
permissible consumer fireworks. Most cities, as you're aware, have taken steps to ban the outright use of permissible consumer fireworks. A couple of communities, Gilbert being the closest one to us, have allowed for some limited use. So as the discussions have transpired over the months with council, we've heard the direction that you wanted to allow for some permitted use during the year. In that vein, we went back and tried to create a statute that, let me back up. There was also at least a concern about perhaps criminalizing the activity of using permissible consumer fireworks. So in that vein, we went back and created a statute that limited the amount of time that citizens could use permissible consumer fireworks, and also crafted a civil provision that allowed for civil complaints to be filed and civil penalties to be issued. Under our current fireworks code, under the fire code, it is a class one misdemeanor to use fireworks within the city of Mesa. That if you are cited for that under that provision, you could face up to 6 months in jail, up to a $2,500 fine plus surcharges and unsupervised supervision. So what we did is, in keeping with council's direction to take this out of the criminal mode into the civil mode, we enacted some hopefully we thought reasonable dollar figures to escalating up the chain to cite individuals if they were in fact using these fireworks illegally within the city.
So basically the rewrite, I mean, if we, I know a couple of cities, I was talking to a few mayors who basically just have done nothing with their codes. They're just moving along, and so mainly through their fire codes, they're disallowing the sale and the use, which means that their existing code will then just be trumped by state laws as it relates to the sale, and they're just leaving things in place, which we could do also. But what I'm hearing from you is the reason for this replacement is to change from a criminal penalty to a civil penalty. That's the primary change. I mean,
primary change, and also to allow for some limited use.
And allow for during the periods if that's what we enact. But right. if the reason why we don't just add that, because I was wondering, well, heck, if they're already not permitted under a fire code, why don't we just add some time frames that says this doesn't apply during these periods? And I guess what I'm hearing is that we're changing from the criminal penalties to a more civil approach to it.
Mayor, I might, excuse me, I might also add another provision that is included in this ordinance that is not in the fire code is with regard to the posting of signs. So under the current code, individuals, because sale was prohibited, there were no signs telling people when it was permissible or not permissible to use. It was banned the entire time. This code or ordinance would require sellers to post a sign telling people who are buying the consumer fireworks when it is permissible in the city of Mesa to use those fireworks.
And so right now they're selling it. I heard someone say that an Albertsons has some right now.
Costco.
And Costco does too. Those don't have signs.
They do
not.
They're
following state law, which has virtually no restrictions.
Well, there's no requirements that they have signs.
Right. Mm-hmm. Let's restrict that. There isn't any requirement. Okay. I'm going to add one thing. I know there was a lot of discussion. I threw out the couple meetings ago this idea of the liability for emergency response in Section 6-21-5. I know that's fairly controversial. I will withdraw that, just ixnay that one. That's a legal term, by the way, ixnay.
There you go.
Ixnay on the Section A. Okay. I did attend that one class where they went over, I think that's Latin for something. There's a lot of Latin thrown around in law school. I think that's one of them.
Pig Latin.
Actually, Mayor, I was thinking about just changing that one to the public spaces so that it limits it. The liability is limited to public spaces right away, that kind of thing, because these are going to be illegal in city parks and such. So it would place liability for anybody using them in the public spaces, desert uplands, any space off of private property. Might be an agreeable change.
Councilmember Higgins, I think, has a comment on that.
Let me just ask, are you saying that you'd still want that section, the $500 call-out charge to the person that's out there? Is it?
But only if I understand it, only if the damage is off their personal property.
It could be even worse in a desert upland situation where, you know, a spark goes off and I think I can put it out, and then, you know, we go off into the Tano National Forest, all 100,000 million acres or whatever.
Well, it's so, going to anyway. I'm just saying that this would
limit it back on. I would be okay with adding an additional fine for using them in that kind of area, but not, again, not a hindrance to call out. You know, I mean, I want them to call if there's an emergency. And, you know, we charge extra
when is
later.
Going to well, I think the whole idea of this was not to cover costs. The whole idea of this was to create some sort of, if you're going to use it in public, in a public area, and I think that it's a disincentive. Mm-hmm. And it's there is an additional potential penalty versus the civil ones that we have. It's already a civil penalty, but for example, if you're in a public area, which right now even under this would be prohibited, and you create damage, there is something we can go after, even if it's even if the fireworks are used during the permissible. So if you go out in the in a public area outside your private property and you create damage, and we have to respond to that, because you're not going to be the one calling in, it's going to be someone else. I'm trying to explain what you're getting at. Then we can go after the person that was using those because it was in a prohibited area. And they created damage that, had they just stayed at home and done their thing, they wouldn't have created it. Is that an accurate description? Okay.
And I'm can't we, couldn't you have a section that specifically addresses a fine for use in a prohibited area? I mean, so you're out there in the desert.
Well, I guess what you could do is state that these penalties apply even during the period of allowed use if you use it in a prohibited area.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, we're getting a...
Well, we're just... No, and just to be clear, there's no use on public property at all.
Right.
If they are found to be using permissible consumer fireworks on public property...
This already covers that.
The fines would be imposed.
Okay.
You can adjust those fines if you want to make them more severe or less severe.
No, I think the idea was I'm trying to take this out, and what we're saying is that we feel okay that in addition to the fines, that we can get sort of the stupid sparkler law if they use that in a prohibited area.
So in essence, Mayor, in essence, creating a separate category with an additional fine on top of, because there could be use of impermissible use that would fall under 621B, and then there could also be impermissible use that also occurred on public land. So you would want to create an additional penalty provision.
Well, let me ask you this. If someone uses it on public lands, aren't there already statutes in place that would allow us to go? I mean, if someone starts a fire using doing illegal activity, yeah, aren't there laws in either state or the city that would allow?
Fire chief saying yes.
Let the record reveal that Chief Beck is nodding. So why touch it?
Not in here, though. That's
okay.
Yeah, Vice Mayor.
All right, I want to throw another little twist in here, because I'm looking at the reality of when people want to use sparklers, and we're saying it's limited to private property, but I can think back in my growing up days where the safest place to do it is out in the middle of the street or in a circle in the asphalt, away from vehicles and houses and bushes. And yet what we're trying to enact here is to say, no, you can't do it. You have to go do it in the yard where you have combustible things around you. That's not your house. That's the street. And you know, in a circle. So I'm concerned about how that would be enforced.
I think frankly, that's what people are going to... The reality is people are going to walk
and
out...
And I don't think that's what we're trying to prohibit it, frankly. I think we're trying to get it out of the parks.
Get it out of the parks. But if you do a literal interpretation...
No, I hear what you're saying.
And an officer comes out, and he's doing a literal interpretation, you're going to be citing people for doing the safest place around their house.
Yeah, Mayor.
Councilmember Richens.
6-21-2 II says public right-of-way.
We can change that if that's council's desire. We can change it to just say it's prohibited in all public parks and retention bases.
Yeah, because I had the same experience when I was a kid in California growing up with these supposedly safe fireworks. That's where we shot them off, was in the middle of the street. Because I remember the next, you know, July 5th, we'd ride around on our bikes and find all the ones that didn't get shot off and have all kinds of fun again. But, of course, I never did that. But anyway, yeah, that was the place that everybody, you'd get a big bucket of water and you'd douse them and all that stuff.
All right. So do we have direction, at least from the majority, to remove the public right-of-way from that section? Alex?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
You should probably add to that then public facilities, so it's not near public buildings.
Public parks, retention basins, public facilities. Okay. Is that all right with everyone? Okay. So we're covered on if we start a fire, illegal use, so 621.5 is still gone, because we believe we have adequate coverage in other existing laws, either at the local or state level. And, okay. Now, have we had any ongoing or additional discussions with industry? Because I understand, and I wasn't there, but I understand that in the city of Phoenix, they had sort of a, some disagreements or misunderstandings. I don't know if Sarah's here or not this morning.
Mayor, yeah, we had to talk about the peddler's license.
Was that what?
The license. You want to talk about that, Alfred?
Yeah.
Let me is Tim here? Tim.
Well, I know there were some questions, and I know in our what we're talking here and in the summary, we talk about how the industry has agreed not to, to sell in any location during the non allowed time periods, and then during the allowed time periods we have those deals, which I'll let you guys figure out. But is that still your understanding?
We are working on the MOU, and that may be available for by Monday. So according to Sarah, yes, that's still on the table.
All right.
Yes, Mayor and Council, currently right now our peddler code requires anyone that's going to sell merchandise from a temporary location to have a peddler's license. That would be the same for selling fireworks, blankets, sunglasses, anything else you're going to sell, or if you're going to go door-to-door.
Do they require that for Christmas trees?
Christmas tree lots and pumpkin lots are exempted in the code right now. So okay. Specifically, if they're a lot, and the difference with that is that they're setting up a permanent temporary structure. They're fencing it.
Or a temporary permanent structure.
One of those.
Yeah.
And they keep it up for 2 weeks, 4 weeks at a time, and that structure stays there at all times, versus where the peddler will normally set up. And they'll set up their merchandise, and they'll take it down, and then they'll come back the next day, and they'll set up, and they can take it down. So it's movable.
Aren't we talking about if they come in? The way it's been described to me is it would be similar to a Christmas tree or a...
What we have decided in talking with licensing, the reasonable approach, at least for this season, is to, we will not require a peddler's license or a special event license, and we will see, and we'll treat it just like a Christmas tree lot or a pumpkin lot, and then we will see what experiences we have, and then we'll bring the issue back to council, and council can decide forward what's the best approach.
I trust you will work out some details with industry to come up with something that's reasonable given the compromise we have. And okay,
sounds good.
So you'll resolve that. Okay. Oh, and we have displays.
Displays, yes. Went into Gilbert and picked up some sparklers and some little fountains, and they had their little sign posted that it's 4th of July and New Year's, had the dates, and no one under 16 to buy. So just a little sign.
But if you'd gone into Mesa right now, you wouldn't see that sign.
Wouldn't see that sign, no.
Okay. All right.
Mayor, just to add to one provision that you were asking about before the meeting started, on 621D, we will go ahead and add in the term selling or offering for sale permissible consumer fireworks in violation of this chapter of civil offense.
Yeah, there was some wording that was not consistent, and I'm sure you'll clean that up a little bit, okay?
Consumer fireworks?
Yeah, there was one, 621-6D that just said fireworks. Selling or offering for sale of fireworks, and that should say consumer fireworks.
Permissible consumer
fireworks.
That's correct.
Yeah. Because the sale of fireworks is prohibited regardless, under state and local.
Non-permissible consumer fireworks is prohibited.
Or the non-sale of permissible consumer works fire, yeah, that too. From a permanent temporary location. Got it. Ixnay on that to discussion, okay?
Head down straight ahead. We're almost through this. Head down straight ahead.
All righty. Okay. Yes,
Mayor, I'm sorry. One other provision. On Section 5, I assume Council still wants to keep this as an emergency provision in order to enact it on Monday to take that date.
I think that's a nice try, but even that, let's put it this way. I don't want it as an emergency provision. Let's take a straight up or down vote. And then if we want to, and those of who are going to oppose this, can have their vote. If we decide after that point in time we want to slap on an emergency provision, set it up so we can do that, and we'll have another vote.
I think the way we would have, I think we would have to list it as two different agenda items. Okay, and we would have one ordinance for introduction, and that would not include the emergency clause. We would have a second agenda item with the same ordinance, but including the emergency clause, and council.
Yeah, I mean, and. Maybe just leave the emergency out of there, because that's not the end of the world. That's not the big thing. And right now, there's no way we're going to get 6 votes on this. So,
okay, so you want us to present it for introduction without...
Unless somebody to the left of me, and I mean that physically and... changes their mind, we're not in an emergency situation. And you know what? That is what it is.
Well,
so I don't want to go through the gyrations of doing something that's not going to work out.
We don't want to see you gyrate.
Yeah.
That wasn't recorded, was it?
Dave, are we headed to bat again? please protect me from bat. Okay.
It's light.
Let's set it up as a regular vote for right now. Okay.
So I just want to make sure the council understands. If we set it up as a regular vote for introduction, we can't add the emergency clause on Monday. But if we have the emergency clause posted, you can take the emergency clause off on Monday.
So what I hear is, regardless, just... emergency is off the table.
Emergency off the table. Let's just handle it as it is. We'll live with it how it is.
That's not what I heard you say. I heard you say two items.
No, I said that, but let's just... All I'm saying is that if you post two items, then you have the option.
So post two items.
And if you don't have the option, we can always pull the other one.
Yeah, he's saying post two options.
Want two items?
Yes.
Just post it with... Okay, we want two items. That I may be perfectly clear, let's have a temporary permanent item. No. Post it as two items, but with the regular vote first. Okay? So A is regular vote, B would be an emergency. That way we have the option of handling it as an emergency.
You could just post just as emergency clause all by itself.
Yeah, because then we would vote down and then have to come back and vote it as a non-emergency. Yeah, I don't want to do that. Okay? Thank you. All right. Oh, the joys of... You know what? The thing about this is that I don't care what we do. I'm not... I'm going to hate sparklers. Yeah, no matter what, I'm going to not like sparklers. Item 2C, hear a presentation, discuss, provide... Well, could I come back just a bit? I don't want to beat this. This whole fireworks thing... This has not been fun for anybody or any city I've talked with. And this is what happens when you have laws that are set up that really create conflicts. And this is, this is just not a good situation. And it all starts with the fact that you have a state law that allows sale. And like I said, and I think the very first time, creates the absurd situation that which we have right now, where you walk into Costco, come out with a stash of fireworks, and the second you step on the street, it's illegal. And we wonder why people have bad feelings about government. It's situations like that. It's just a ridiculous situation. I think what we've tried to do is to craft a compromise. And the trade-off is very simple. Hopefully in working in a good faith situation with the industry that we could restrict sales through the year, but the compromise is it will allow certain uses. I was perfectly happy with the way it was, but I think we've been put in a situation that is really it's just an absurd situation. So I hope people see this as what happens when you compromise. I'm glad that we can restrict sales and allow use on a limited basis, and hopefully that'll work. And I honestly believe that probably in a year it's going to be out of our hands because the legislature is going to do something anyway. So this is just where we are. So thank you. Okay, item 2C. Hear presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the proposed amendments to the Mesa zoning ordinance regarding medical marijuana dispensaries. Okay.
This is just a
Mr. Sheffield.
Mayor, Council, we came to you in October talking to you about what could happen if Proposition 203 passed. It has passed. We have gone to the Planning and Zoning Board. They held a public hearing and made certain recommendations to you. We're back to you now to talk about those recommendations and see if you're interested in using those recommendations for possible introduction of ordinance. We talked about Prop 203 a little bit. I can go over that if you want to, or if you want to get directly into the discussion about the recommendations.
Well, let's just cut to the chase. I think we've had the discussion on 203. We're not going to change the outcome of the vote. Let's just talk about where we're going to allow them.
We want to talk a little bit about the timing of all of these. One of the things that's inherent in the proposition is that the Department of Health Services has 120 days to develop regulations. for those and publish those. We anticipate that based on the calendar that's been presented by the DHS director, that he would have those ready by March 28th. In order for us to have rules ready by then, we generally have to have something enacted, usually probably by the beginning of February or so. We've tried to set up a schedule such that the council, we would talk about this today. There would be an introduction of ordinance possibly on January 10th. Council would consider this on January 24th, so it would be effective by February 23rd. If we get much later than that, then we're kind of treading on dangerous ground and possibly getting into a point where we may not have our rules in effect by the time that DHS has their regulations in place. Real quickly, what other cities are doing. There has been a model ordinance that's developed by the Arizona League of Cities and Towns. We have used this as part of a guide to help us develop the regulations in Mesa. Tucson, Marana, Pima County, Queen Creek, and Maricopa County have already adopted their zoning amendments. Phoenix, Tempe, Chandler, Scottsdale, Flagstaff has scheduled P&Z hearings this month. In fact, Phoenix and Scottsdale had their P&Z meetings last night. Gilbert held their P&Z hearing on December 2nd. Most ordinances use intermediate commercial and general commercial districts as the primary locations for these districts. There's some carryover, depending upon which city you're in, where they would also make their industrial districts eligible for medical marijuana dispensaries. Gilbert is the exception to this rule. Gilbert has said no to their commercial districts and only their industrial districts.
And that now, I mean, I know I'm jumping ahead, but just right. As long as you brought that up. So ours, as I recall, we were just talking about commercial districts.
Would be commercial only, no industrial.
And since then, I mean, I guess as we started thinking about it, there's a lot. We talk industrial, but a lot of these industrial are like those what I would call storefront warehouses, which is the majority of. That would seem like it would be
a better choice.
Yeah, like a natural type choice because you could have both operations. And what's not a heavy industrial, I mean, because a lot of those work out to be office and other things, but they're away from our general commercial areas, and it would seem like a viable alternative, although I know we didn't talk about that before. Councilman Richens.
I still prefer looking at only OS-type space, office space. It's just like a doctor's office. They claim it's medical marijuana, so people are coming and going from a doctor's office all day long. It should be treated just the same as a medical facility, and I like the signage requirements in OS already. I like the way they're spaced out from residential and commercial. It doesn't give anybody that big storefront Main Street presence generally. I'd really like us to look at restricting this to office space only. That would be my preference.
Okay.
Councilman Higgins.
Can I just add something, Councilman Richens, that the concern with that is typically we put OS closer to neighborhoods as a buffer between a neighborhood
and a low use,
and that to me is a concern, although I see where you're going, but I'd much prefer to see it in a industrial zoned area where it's away from the Albertsons and the doctor's office. Where
why are you pointing toward my district?
I'm just pointing. I'm Italian, what can I say?
Councilman Finter.
Well, I thought I saw in the presentation that there might be a growing operation behind with the storefront in front. Is that
yes,
true?
Yes. The part of the Prop 203 requirements require the cultivation by the dispensary, and so that dispensary can either be the cultivation can be either on site as the same as the dispensary or off site. Typically, we're thinking that most cases the cultivation is going to be an off-site cultivation facility attached with that. The off-site cultivation, we're recommending C3, M1, and M2.
I mean, I guess that's what got me thinking. If you're going to a storefront warehouse, you can move the retail operations to where the cultivation is. They can do it in one place, and that way you don't clutter up anything. You get the residential separation. You get the, well, except for those schools that are in industrial areas.
We could ban it for a certain distance from
schools. Well, we do have a certain distance from schools.
You
keep the distances, but you leave it in there. But that gets it off Main Street, and most industrial places are not facing a heavy. So, actually, to Councilman Richens' comment, I mean, they don't give you the huge story. There are a few places where that does exist, but most of them are in industrial parks.
Yeah, the argument for commercial as opposed to industrial is basically a SEPTED argument. The idea basically is that what you're trying to do is to get
We have sparklers, medical marijuana, and we're going to bring back Septed in this meeting? Gee, we're hitting them all, aren't we?
Well, I got a couple more.
Well, part of the materials that were sent out included a link to a white paper that was done by the California Police Chiefs Association and their study of some of the secondary effects of crime related to medical marijuana.
But how does that change if you have a growing operation in an industrial area as opposed to retail? Is it because it would seem like it would be create more issues if you just have a growing situation that's hidden away?
Part of the issue has to do not only with the fact that people may burglarize or try to rob the marijuana that's in the storehouse, but also the secondary effects of people who might be attacked after they've purchased the marijuana themselves.
Gotcha.
Where someone who might have purchased the marijuana coming away from the store, and then someone attacked them for the marijuana itself.
Has that been an issue in California and places like that?
The police chiefs say yes.
Okay. Councilmember Kavanaugh.
I was just going to say, I thought that the staff and the Planning and Zoning Board made some reasonable recommendations in terms of the locations, and I think that there are some reasonable arguments to be made for location in at least the commercial areas that they've recommended, just in terms of access and parking, in terms of the requirements that we have there. I think we have to have some degree of caution in regulating the location so stringently that again you might lead to some legal challenges, and so that's why I thought that the Planning and Zoning Board recommendations were pretty thoughtful, and I support those. Thank you,
Councilmember Summers.
Mayor, I was just wondering if PD had any information about the crimes around these things as we're making this decision, as we had talked about increase in burglaries and such, and I wonder if they had any stats, because there are 13 or 14 other states that have enacted this, so it's not as though this is new. Chief?
Mayor, Council, there are no hard numbers as far as percentages of increases. Like was mentioned, the white paper coming from the California Chiefs of Police Association, they have seen an increase in robberies of the dispensaries. What that has elevated to is also they're now starting to see a trend of robberies and home invasions of the individual growers. What's happening is they're not keeping the money and the bulk of the product at the dispensaries. They're keeping those at a different location. So you are seeing that. What they also in the report was an increase in nuisance crimes like loitering, littering, parking issues, those types of crimes. There's a lot of information out there that indicates both pro and con of increased crime near dispensaries and reduction of that it does not make an impact. But what is reported by the California Chiefs of Police is that they are seeing an increase in robberies of the dispensaries and of the individuals going to pick up the product.
Did zoning have any effect on the number of crimes, commercial versus industrial or office, or have any SEPTED principles been put into place around these that would seem to have a positive impact on reducing crime?
The report itself didn't specify commercial or industrial districts one way or the other. It was used oftentimes to support total bans in California for the dispensaries themselves, which several cities in California have acted, but their enabling laws are different than they are in Arizona.
And also one of the things that was outlined in the report was that the strong feeling that crimes are unreported in those areas by the users and by people around there. And it was very difficult to get accurate data across the board when it relates to the dispensaries.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. A couple of other things. Separation requirements. P&Z, we had initially recommended a 2,400-foot separation between dispensaries. P&Z increased that to a full mile. We are still recommending a 2,400-foot separation between the rehab facility, so to speak, as well as 1,200 feet from what we generally refer to as the protected classes, churches, parks. We've included HOA-maintained open spaces simply because it's a private functioning park, libraries and schools, and then we remained 500 feet from daycare, primarily because there are so many daycare facilities that are in commercial sites already.
Councilmember Higgins, I think, has a question.
So, yeah, that's a big concern to me, but if we were to eliminate it from C2 and C3, then you could increase the distance to child care centers?
There are a lot of child care centers in M1 and M2 is also.
The 1,200 feet, I thought Phoenix was going to a mile between schools also.
I had just sent this out. Last I checked with Deborah Stark, who's the planning director mm-hmm. in Phoenix, the only correction she had is Phoenix had added the same prohibition that we're recommending, I'll get to, about drive-thrus and outdoor seating.
Because that 1,200 feet seems awfully close to schools, libraries, and that list. So that's a concern for me, and so is the 500 feet. And I don't know if we got rid of C2 and C3, how that might affect.
I'm going to kind of advance a little bit to the map. This is if you take into account the existing separations from all of the existing facilities within the city itself, if we were just to look at C2 and C3 districts, the areas that are not shaded gray would be the only eligible sites within the city once we take into account the existing separations recommended by the Planning and Zoning Board. For the most part, this eliminates a significant portion of the commercial districts that are in the city. You have the larger commercial sites, the Riverviews, the Fiesta Malls, the Superstition Springs Centers, as well as some larger centers that are out toward the east, the Signal Butte sites. And then there's some areas near along Main Street. But for the most part, it eliminates many of the neighborhood type commercial centers that are around the city with the existing 1,200 foot that we're talking about now. If we were trying to increase that, we might be pushing the envelope a little bit.
But as I look at that, I can see that in every section of the city, there's at least one or two places where one of these could go.
Yes.
In the four quadrants. North, south, east, west.
There's
potential, which I think goes to what Councilman Kavanaugh was worried about, that if we make it too restrictive, in essence, we outlaw by restriction.
Correct.
Which I agree. We just can't do. We can't regulate these things out of business because it's been approved.
Right.
Okay. So it doesn't look like they're concentrated. It does look like there are places, there's more limited up in the northeast section, but there are still places they can go. So as long as they're in the center, northeast, southeast, all the quadrants, I don't know what else you could ask for.
Can we put a stipulation on that they can't sell anything in violation of federal law?
You wanted to raise that issue? Go ahead and talk about it.
Councilman Richens, Council. Orange County had that in their language, and we are just concerned that if we put that in, that then we would be opening ourselves up to litigation for preemption.
Has Orange County been sued?
Theirs just passed on November 23rd.
How many dispensaries do they have?
I don't know. But Mayor and Council, if the Council wants to include that language, we can certainly include that language.
Let's back up, get a little bit more explanation. I guess since we've sort of gone into that territory, give a quick explanation of what Councilman Richens was talking about.
We have the language, the specific language that we're passing out. I think it might be...
Well, give a summary explanation as to what we're saying.
The provision says that no permit, license, or other discretionary approval will be issued by the County of Orange pursuant to this section that would permit the sale or distribution of marijuana unless it's consistent with local, state, and federal law. So it would be consistent with state law in California. It would not be consistent with federal law because obviously the possession, sale, and use of marijuana is prohibited by federal law.
It can't be consistent with federal law because federal law prohibits it, although the federal government has said they're not going to enforce that.
Right.
So then
the idea is it's a backdoor way of eliminating. Okay. And the idea is it would be interesting to watch as somebody go into a court and argue that they should be allowed to violate federal law, which would make for an interesting argument. I'm not sure I want to be the one that makes that argument, but...
You know who would be good at this? Phoenix. Phoenix would be good at this.
Phoenix is our Mikey, huh? Yeah. Give it to Mikey.
The other cities have considered this, but to the best of my knowledge, none have decided to include it.
I haven't seen anybody propose this yet.
If I may, Mayor?
Yeah, go ahead.
At any time, DEA, the federal government, can decide to enforce federal law and start shutting these down, couldn't they?
Presumably, yes.
So why would we have to call in an airstrike on ourselves? It's been approved by the state law, and if the federal government wants to finally
enforce
the law in court for a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. We will end up in court. And
against the wishes of the majority of the electorate?
Yeah, I don't know what it would accomplish.
Neither do I.
Okay, Councilmember Fender.
Just a quick question. I appreciated Chief Meza's presentation. Did the P&Z board have that information, especially about the loitering and the, you know, some of those challenges around the facility?
We discussed this with them on the study session.
So they had a good picture of that as a challenge. Okay, thanks.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
In addition to the spacing requirements, we're also talking about limitations on some of the facilities, including a maximum of 2,500 square foot for the actual dispensary itself, of which only 500 square feet would be actually used for the storage of product. They would have at least 25% of their gross floor area devoted to customer floor space, as well as being required to be located in a permanent building. They couldn't locate in a tent or a...
And Gordon, this is pretty consistent with what other cities are doing.
It's off and on. The Tucson, the Pima County folks have done much of this. There are a couple of cities in the valley that are also doing this. A couple of cities are not doing this.
I mean, they're just leaving it wide open. You can go into whatever space, do whatever you want. Okay.
Exactly. For the terms of the off-site cultivation, the maximum size would be 3,000 square feet. Storage would be up to 1,000. Customer floor areas doesn't apply to this particular. It will also have to be done in a permanent building. If there is a rule that says if there are no dispensaries within 25 miles of a particular patient who holds a card from DHS, they can grow their own. And so we're placing a limit, we're allowing that as an accessory use in residential and placing a cap of 250 square feet on the size of that particular building. That would include storage and everything else. So there are some of those facility requirements. There's also some service limitations that we're recommending. Drive-through window service would be prohibited. Open air seating would be prohibited. We're also recommending a prohibition on delivery services through this. We require a registration through the city's planning department so that we know where the locations of these are at. This is not that big a deal, quite honestly, because we require this for group homes also. The P&Z board asked us to recommend that this registration would be only valid for 1 year, and there would be an annual renewal of these, and so we've placed that as part of the recommendation as well.
Gordon, Councilmember Summers has a question.
Why the limitation on delivery service? I know it has the specter of maybe being like the 30-minute pizza, but there are legitimate drugs that are delivered to folks. I mean, if you look at it, if they're seriously debilitating and they're using this for a legitimate medical reason, arguably, folks with MS or end-stage cancer, those types of things aren't going to be getting out. So I would think delivery would be okay there. The other issue is a delivery service.
So there are a couple of things. One is that the law anticipates the delivery of the product by having a caregiver provision. So if for some reason you can't get out, then you can get a designated caregiver, and the caregiver can go get the medication for you. Part of it, and then part of the reason for the thought on the prohibition on delivery is that you get a card and you're limited to 2.5 ounces per, I think it's 2 weeks if I remember correctly, of the actual marijuana product. And so part of the thought is that there might be possibilities for fraud that might exist if someone were to do it through a delivery service, because they may not necessarily see the card. Someone might order delivery from one service and not a, and a second service at the same time, and the cards aren't swiped, and they end up getting more than they should.
Yeah, and they have to swipe.
I'd really like to see the little cars with the things put up on the roofs, like the pizza. That would be great. I'm sorry, go ahead. Councilmember Higgins.
Is there, while we're talking prohibition of stuff, is there a prohibition of using medical marijuana in public? You know, there's some places that there is. Is it in
it's
the
in
state
the proposition.
Law? Or is it in our ordinance? Okay, cool.
So, can I follow up on that? So I was actually wrote that down. So that's in the law that you cannot consume this in public? I thought it might be part of the smoking ordinance, too.
Pretty sure.
It's a limitation specifically to state law, no smoking in public places.
Oh, good. Okay.
Would that qualify as good or bad secondhand smoke? Go ahead. Don't answer that.
It depends on if you're
sick. Go ahead. Hazard a guess. Okay, we showed you the map. Just kind of to drill down a little bit more, these are some of the actual intersections. Again, once we apply the spacing requirements, this is the intersection of Gilbert and Southern, and once we apply all the recommended spacing from the Planning and Zoning Board, I mean, quite honestly, all you have left is just one very, very small corner of the intersection. Again, drilling down, this is the corner of Power and McKellops, and you only end up with a very small portion of a shopping center there. So it does.
I can't read that. Can you tell me what portion of that color we're looking at?
You're looking at the pink, just the pink. I'm sorry.
Which one's the pink?
It's
the one that's kind of reddish.
You can't tell at all.
It would be this area right at the very, very
just that
tip.
That
yes, explains. Just that.
Right on the commercial. Hey, hand that to Dina.
In that.
Pink.
And then just this particular location right here at Power McKellops.
Councilman Summers?
That's.
What? Let me ask you this. I would very much prefer that this not go downtown or in our TOD areas. Is there anything we could add specifically? I know we don't want to over-restrict these things, but...
We're proposing only C2 and C3. Downtown has a different zoning classification.
With the new zoning?
None of the downtown area would be.
And what about the TOD, transit-oriented development areas?
If we enact form-based code, that will have a different zoning district also. We're not proposing it in the form-based code right now.
So they wouldn't be allowed in that area either?
Not specifically, no.
Okay.
Mayor, Councilmember Richards.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Presley.
That would be a little longer term. We'd have certainly some period of time here
right.
when the medical marijuana facilities could get established. We would still have C2 zoning at Stakely in Maine.
Yeah.
So it could get started before a different ordinance.
I'm kind of intrigued and leaning toward somewhat to Dave's suggestion, but also what the mayor had said is that I'm really thinking it might be better that these are in the industrial areas, the light industrial areas where you have that storefront, and then in the back you have the possibility of growing. We had the opportunity, most of this council did, to go to Denver for our National League of Cities meeting, and their main area, 16th Street, very nice area, transit-oriented. It's buses up and down, no cars. You have retail over residential and commercial, or retail below residential or commercial. And sure as heck, didn't we find a couple of facilities, of medical marijuana facilities up there with some interesting folks hanging out. And I had quipped, by the way, that I was going to go see how easy it was to get a card, and that made it through the entire NLC. Everybody from Arizona came up to me and goes, "Did you get your medical marijuana card yet?" I was only kidding. I shouldn't do that. But what was fascinating about it is it didn't very, having been in the medical field for a long time, my wife as well, we're used to getting, calendars and pens that different medications on them that you can get. So when I came across a newspaper while I was there, this was the advertisement for all the medicinal marijuana. Where is it? You got to zoom in on this. This is great. For all the medicinal marijuana places. And it just tells you to enjoy. Right. And then Dave Richens saw this, Councilmember Richens, I'm sorry, saw this, and his favorite is if you take this, then you're going to be snowboarding within a few days. We thought that was a rather fascinating one. I didn't see anybody with a debilitating disease doing it. Northern Lights says their medication is so delightful. I thought that was rather fascinating as well. And there were some other, some of them in here, actually, if you bring a friend, you get a free brownie. I don't know what's in the brownie, but you get a free brownie. So I would rather keep these out of the commercial. I think when you put them in a commercial area, this is the type of thing you get. It becomes recreational, quite frankly. And if it's going to be medicinal, I would rather keep these things into or explore the area of keeping them into their commercial areas where they don't have the opportunity to sensationalize the product. Thank you, Mayor.
Councilmember Higgins?
A question, Gordon. If this was to stay in M1 and M2 zoning, do we have enough spaces available per your map, do you feel, to accommodate the needs of Mesa residents?
I brought up a map. It's a similar map to the commercial districts that shows the industrial sites. They're not quite as dispersed, and you certainly don't get them toward the center of town at all. They tend to be on the periphery of the city where most of the industrial sites are now. For the most part, you'd find these along Baseline with between Country Club to about Stapley, okay, in the Falcon Field area, in the Gateway Airport area, and in the area north of Gateway Airport. So there are some strong limitations if they were just limited to industrial.
Would, in this picture, would there be someone? There's nobody within 25 miles. I mean, the city's, you'd be covered for the city of Mesa.
If the dispensaries were to locate on the periphery of the city, then I wouldn't necessarily worry about the 25-mile provision so much. The 25 miles, I mean, quite. You put two dispensaries within the industrial districts, that would cover pretty much the 25-mile radius.
And there would be a mile separation between each of them, correct? So you wouldn't.
Yeah, if you were to carry forward the recommendation and only change the commercial to industrial districts, yes.
So you wouldn't get a cluster of them in any one of these areas because they'd have to be a mile apart.
Well, the thing that I would be cautious about is that my understanding from from what's been said is that these will probably be distributed proportionately throughout the entire state. The state is looking at approximately 120 of these. If they were to sit here and, for example, proportion means population, then proportionally we're probably looking at somewhere between 6 and 10 of these facilities within the city of Mesa. If we were to have a 1 mile radius of those facilities, I'm not sure that we could fit 6 to 10 using just industrial districts.
Perfect.
Yeah. So I know that, you know, it ends up clustering in Councilmember Summers' district and mine, but, I mean, again, I'm looking at the reality of what we're doing and where would they be the safest and away from the average person who's shopping in Mesa. And I mean, I'm just more inclined to go to these M1 area or M2.
And I'm not trying to be argumentative, forgive me if it sounds that way. Going back to the commercial sites again, part of the reason for doing that is that there's a lot of passive surveillance that occurs. There's a lot of activity that goes on there. There's typically some thought that the more passive surveillance that you have on the site, the less chance for the smash and run type of robberies, the patient type of theft that you have that goes along with that. If you were to put these into industrial districts, you don't have that same type of traffic, so to speak, that's there. And so the amount of passive surveillance you have on the particular property itself is much less. The occurrence, the thought is that deters the type of theft from a patient much less than it would be if it was in a commercial district.
So there's the trade-off.
Yes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's a map, right? I've got the map okay. here.
Councilmember Summers?
I mean, that hasn't helped Circle K. Well, I don't want to pick on that one. It hasn't helped a lot of our
what's the word I'm looking for here, convenience stores. There's a lot of smash and grab going on there. There are petty thefts going on there, and we're having to deal with that. We're talking through SEPTED. I hate to bring this up again because I know the mayor gets a headache from this. Well, here, you can have some of this. I think what we'll need to do is no matter where we put these, we're going to have to be looking at some kind of SEPTED or crime prevention through environmental design, whether they're commercial or industrial, because they're going to attract that kind of activity. I'm not so sure that just because they're on a street that people are driving by that's really going to help that much. The other thing with this map is that the blue is significantly constrained by some of the separations, and we may want to look at, if we are going to focus on the industrial areas, reducing some of those restrictions that are in the dark, the charcoal gray or black there.
Well, actually, when I brought up the industrial areas, I didn't bring it up as an alternative. I brought it up as an addition so we could possibly offer an alternative that would push or give an option to get out of.
Yeah, that's why I like both.
Not as an either or. You can't go there, you must go there. I mean, if someone has a choice between a good place where they can both sell and do the cultivation, to me that would be a good option for everyone. I think we're moving into hyperbole.
No.
We don't have any statistics as it relates to the criminal activity. And this was approved with the idea this is medical marijuana. And we can poo-poo that all we want, but the fact of the matter is this is medical marijuana. This isn't an open season, and I think we have to take at good faith the fact that those are the activities that are going to happen. Whether we like it or not, this is the law. I think we also probably need to take it at good faith that those people who deal in this are going to create their own security and types of things, and the fact is we're never going to completely eliminate things. I think we can go way into all the what ifs and the urban legends and all the other things, and we just need to deal with the facts that we have them. Try and put these in a well-defined objective type place, and if we want to include or include industrial as an option, so that perhaps, because here's the deal, we're going to have the cultivation in the industrial areas anyway.
Right.
And so, I mean, my idea is if you want to limit the exposure, give an option to where they can do the cultivation and the retail at the same place. You know, I would assume that anyone who's halfway bright, who's going to run one of these businesses, is going to put it in a place where they can have adequate security. And I know that that's, to some people, is like rolling the dice, but I don't know that we can anticipate every situation or we can create the worst case scenario in these when, once again, we're dealing with medical issues. So that's the only reason why I threw out the industrial was perhaps to add. And I get it that some of the older industrial areas are really not very good, but a lot of these are newer. You know, you look at out in the Superton Springs area, out in even the Southwest area, Falcon Field area, these new types of warehouse type industrial are not like a lot of the older stuff where they're dingy streets and all that. They're pretty wide open and they have some good things. I was just offering it as an additional option.
And to kind of bolster what you're saying, Mayor, the recommendation that was coming from our staff was that we weren't going to go into industrial. The other communities that are considering this do have a carryover provision. Phoenix does, Flagstaff does, Queen Creek does, Gilbert is, like I said, just industrial. Maricopa County also has a carryover. So traditionally there are commercial uses do carry over into industrial.
Okay, so yeah. That could be allowed in,
yes,
in
those areas. It's a very simple thing.
Mayor, I would also add that under the initiative itself, the Department of Health Services is going to pass rules, and one of the specific areas where they are supposed to pass rules includes setting the minimum security requirements for nonprofit dispensaries, including requirements for protection of each registered dispensary location by fully operational security alarm system. So DHS is going to also be reviewing the security needs of these dispensaries and imposing some rules regarding the security.
Right.
Mayor, an idea, excuse me, is to, you know, go ahead with an M1, M2 kind of situation, see how it plays out. If all of a sudden we have an issue where we don't have enough space and we're not meeting the requirements for our city, then we expand it to go to C2, C3. I'd be more comfortable with that. I mean, I just think as a starting place, can we start? And we can start and change it along the way. I know we can. So why don't we start off with something like that and see what happens? That would be my recommendation if I was recommending anything.
Councilman Richens.
This one's really a frustrating situation, to say the least. I'm really struggling supporting anything in commercial districts. However, is there a way, maybe, you know, really we want to be able to evaluate each of these locations as they go in? Are they appropriately suited, to, whether it's in a commercial or an industrial district or in an office space or any of those? I mean, is there a situation that we might want to do a council or special use permit attached to each of these so we have an opportunity to review them before they go into a commercial or industrial or office space or next to Chris's house? As he grins over there like a Cheshire cat.
Yeah. I'm getting back to where Dennis is on this. I think the P&Z has vetted these things. I voted against this. I do not support medical marijuana, but it's the law. I think we're having a tendency to way overblow. Is that another technical term?
You overblew.
I think we're looking at the extreme that even though I am not personally in favor of it, I seriously doubt that a lot of these situations are ever going to come about. I mean, I was in Denver and walked the streets and saw the facilities, and they looked like any other ordinary business, you know, except for the sign on the wall and up there, but they were mixed in with other businesses. I got to imagine that if those were hotbeds of crime or whatever, you wouldn't see those things mixed in like that. I really think that with the regulations that DHS is going to come up with, and I think they're going to be overly cautious about putting restrictions on this. And I think, first of all, they're the ones that have been mandated to control this. We haven't. Our only obligation is to say, here's where in our city you can put it, and it has to be reasonable. I would go back to, I think there's all different scenarios we could talk about. I just sort of think that we've come up with a reasonable one for right now. And I agree with Councilmember Higgins that let's take a look at it and see how it plays out. Once again, we're talking about how many in our whole city? We've got 140 square miles. Eight?
Yeah, somewhere between 6 and 10, we think.
6 and 10. I mean, we're talking about 6 to 10 locations over 140 square miles. That's not a whole lot of places, and they're not going to cluster if they're a mile apart. And I, as much as I don't like it, I think we've come up with something pretty reasonable.
What if we were just to eliminate C2? We keep it C3, M1, M2, PEP. What would that look like?
C2
would eliminate most of the larger commercial sites. C3 tends to cluster along Country Club and along Main Street. There's very little C3 out of those two particular.
So there's not a lot of C2 in this thing anyway, is what you're telling me?
No, there's
not a lot of. Yeah, if you eliminate
C3.
C2,
okay.
There's not a lot of C3,
the map
period.
Wouldn't look that much different than the industrial map.
Alex.
I appreciate what you're saying, but maybe we could do a head count. I'm on the industrial side, just going with industrial, and maybe there, I don't know how many votes there are, but. See how it goes.
General feelings about the idea is that we start with industrial and not do any commercial. Counting my fingers. Now, if we
close one.
Yeah, if we were to do this has to go back to P&Z through the process because this is a change. Oh, it does not?
No. No.
Because
it includes, because it already includes those activities,
well,
or what?
They discussed it at P&Z.
Oh, okay.
And although they recommended commercial.
Okay, so it was brought up at P&Z, so we can go ahead.
Yeah, we had a very thorough discussion during the study session on Tuesday before the Wednesday.
So it looks like the direction would be that we start out with an M1, M2 starting place as the accepted site with the other restrictions still in place, mm-hmm. correct? Am I hearing, Dave? The separations and all those unchanged?
And the federal thing.
And the federal thing, too.
I'm willing to, oh, sorry, Mayor, if I may. I would be willing to, and not at this meeting, of course, but maybe have staff start to tinker a little bit with the separations to see.
Would you come back with a, I know we have a map right there with a specific map shows, because in my head I'm feeling we still have the same quadrant collection, because our M1, if people will remember, I mean, if you look at the area right behind Superstition Springs Mall, that's M1.
Yeah, let's go to the Elmo. The Elmo shows the map.
Okay.
But it doesn't have separations in it, though.
Go to.
Yeah,
what's that?
Have the separations in
yeah, the,
it?
This map shows with the separations are recommended by P&Z.
Can you blow that up at all?
But we can tweak that, right? The separations without going back to
Gordon, this is the zoom.
This map shows M1, M2 with the separations that are currently.
Oh, I get it, because it's the same approach. The gray is the areas that are excluded.
Right. So if we tinker with those numbers a little bit, that could open up a few extra.
Okay, so it looks like you've got areas. All right. So you got areas down in the southeast. You got areas along the freeway in the southwest.
The only thing about, I would say, on the south.
You got areas up in the northwest.
Most of that blue around the airport is airport property.
Yeah,
it's not going there.
Well, it's, yeah.
It's not going out there anyway.
I think we need to tweak. I mean, let's look at it by.
For example, go to the area around Power and Southern, in that area right along the 60. I don't see that show up.
That would be this.
You know what I'm talking about between
right.
Power and Sossaman.
Right. It's this area right here.
Yeah.
And it gets,
is that all excluded?
The significant portions of it are, yes.
See, and that's why if we tweak with the numbers.
You charter schools and industrial zones and. You can't put dispensaries there.
Which we can't control either, so. We didn't do that.
We can, as Councilmember Summers suggested, we can play with the separations a little bit.
Why don't you come back? Because as long as we can get some of that warehouse storefront type stuff.
Yeah.
The newer stuff and allow for all quadrants to be covered, I think that would be reasonable.
Okay.
And it seems like the majority of the council is willing to take a look at that at least.
Should I also look at the C3 option also?
Sure.
Yeah, well, combine those two, yeah. Because that's heavy duty commercial and
that was,
the light
right, that would, and that would be the possibility of opening up some sites along Main or along
okay.
Patrick.
Okay.
So C3 with the M1 and the M2.
Correct.
Yeah. Dina?
Are we looking at all of what the county is doing so that these county islands we have within the city boundaries?
The county is looking at, they're doing theirs through a special use permit in C2 and C3. For the most part, the areas that would be affected near Mesa would be probably Apache Trail or Main Street as you extend east,
okay.
And then not much else.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Mayor, I might just ask, Councilmember Summers asked that we tweak the separations. Do you have specific separations you want us to?
What? When we
increase,
talk
decrease?
About it after, so we're not tying this up. But we can. I think if we play with those numbers, and I'm thinking about that area around the Superstition Mall, back and behind there might be an acceptable area. We'll have to take a look.
I'm wanting to know why that area is grayed in, because it seems like
there's a
is there a charter school?
I think
there?
It's not a charter school. There's a daycare.
Well, there's a daycare right on Southern and the road that goes.
But the area is so vast. I think if we play with those numbers a little bit, we'll open some things
up,
make it acceptable.
We can drill down into that area similar to what we did.
All right, is that adequate discussion? Then bring that back that map for us, and let's plan on moving that way. M1, M2, C3.
Now, just to be, again, to be kind of cautious about this, we're getting into the holiday season. Are we still online for January 10th in terms of introduction of ordinance?
I would say that should still work. You come back to the next...
Emergency clause.
Yeah, let's do an emergency clause.
We would accept the charter.
And when it passes emergency, we'll all light sparklers to celebrate.
Well,
that's the only thing you're lighting up.
But we'll actually we'll go out in the middle of the street. All right. Okay. Yeah. Let's go that route.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is to hear a presentation, provide direction and recommendation to modify the city's permitting process in order to further facilitate and encourage the planning of special events in downtown Mesa.
Should we take a 5-minute break?
Okay, it's 9 o'clock. Let's, while you set up, let's come back at 9:10. We will now talk about downtown Mesa, and we'll turn it over to Ms. Lewis and Mr. Short.
To you about a concept today that we believe will help us further encourage the planning and permitting of downtown events in Mesa. I'm joined here today with David Short.
Morning.
David is the new executive director for the Downtown Mesa Association, and we're really glad to be working with him. He's been a great member of the team already. He's joined by Freddie Curry, who is the current board chair for the Downtown Mesa Association. And then also in the audience with me today is my team, which includes Tim Meyer with Tax and License. He oversees the permitting process for special event licenses. Gordon Sheffield, the zoning administrator. And then also some members from the economic development team who have been part of helping us through this process and work through it and make the right kinds of choices. We were inspired by looking into this with a couple of factors, but first and foremost by the Council's strategic initiatives. You've been very, very clear about the focus of downtown and the need to really revitalize it, wanting to attract more visitors, supporting community events, and in particular those that we can do in partnership with community groups. And like downtown policies, any policy, you've told us that you'd like us to try to seek some solutions that help to facilitate the success of businesses. And so what we're going to be talking to you about today kind of hits all of those themes. We're going to focus, this is going to be kind of a phased approach. And so this is really just the start of some of the things that we want to get accomplished. And so I just wanted to let council know that the feedback today is really on this very first area, which is about the planning approach and policy. And if you give us the go-ahead at the end of this presentation, then a team of staff that I've, some of them I've mentioned, but others, including the DMA, will be looking more specifically at the guidelines and tools and fees that also go along with permitting special events downtown. So that will be kind of the secondary piece of work that we'll be doing. And before we talk about the solutions that we're going to be bringing forward, I just wanted to frame some of the existing regulatory steps. The first two areas is what we're going to be talking about more specifically, but if you're a voluntary organization and you want to do a special event in downtown, these are some of the things and the requirements that we have in place today. And the first is called a special use permit. And the special use permit is required citywide anytime you're going to have more than four events in any particular location in the city. And the genesis of having this was really about providing an appeal process so that if it became problematic for the property owners or merchants or anyone who lives or is impacted by an event, there's an appeal process. Unfortunately, the most consistent or typical way that we go through that appeal process is through a Board of Adjustment hearing, which, as you know, is very formal and quasi-judicial and probably not the best vehicle to have these kinds of conversations. The second thing is a special event license. Every time you're going to have a special event, you're required to go through a special event license. There's a cost of $100 per license. And once you submit your application, it goes through a cross-departmental review on lots of technical matters, the checks and balances of public safety and risk management and transportation and barricading and making sure that the event is well organized and safe. If you are going to have beer gardens or need a liquor license, you have to come to council and to the state for a state liquor license. And if you're selling goods or there's a commercial transaction, you're required to get an annual peddler's license and a tax license. So all of these things are steps, and if you're a volunteer planner, trying to do an event, it can be somewhat intimidating for you. Some of the challenges that that we've seen most recently, and of course there's others, but these are a couple of the key ones related today, is a need for proactive communications and centralized information sharing. People, and in particular the merchants and the property owners along downtown, I mean, what we've heard from them is they love these events. They want to see more of them happen. They just want to make sure they know what is happening, what's coming, how it might impact them. They want to be able to mitigate some of the impacts of the event itself, and just make sure they know what's going on. And so that's an area that we want to improve on. We also really learned from the special event or the special use permit process and lessons from the Board of Adjustment. And most particularly when John Richards with Downtown Events was coming forward for a third Friday event. John Richards is the fellow who coordinates Motorcycles on Main, which has been a fantastic event for downtown. He wanted to do a third Friday event that was geared more towards vehicles, rats, rods, and roadsters, something like that. And there were some issues with some of the property owners, and it was sort of a surprise, caught us all off guard. But they went through the Board of Adjustment process, and again, very formal, quasi-judicial, wasn't the best way for us to really have some good solution-oriented conversations.
And Natalie, once again, the reason for that is that that's what the ordinance requires.
It is what the ordinance requires.
Whether we like it or not, that's the law that's in place, and that's the procedure that's prescribed in the law.
Yes, there are two ways to go through that appeal process, and one is through a zoning hearing administrator or through the Board of Adjustment. But typically what staff has done is gone through the Board of Adjustment because it's a voluntary group of people.
Either way, it's a formal procedure. It's a judicial process. Like you said, it's a quasi-judicial procedure. It's not conducive to the type of...
Correct.
Of working out issues so we can make things succeed. It's setting down very well-defined lines, which doesn't really work for anybody.
Exactly.
Okay.
So to before we came up with our solutions, we came up with some ideas and some concepts, and we did talk to lots of different stakeholders in downtown, individuals who are organizing events, groups and boards. All of them are listed here. A cross-departmental team of staff was also involved. Of course, the Downtown Mesa Association. We talked with David first. We met also with the executive team at the DMA and also the general board at the DMA.
So the role we hope for Downtown Mesa Association and Ultimate Imagination is to become more of an advocate, facilitator of these events, to help them through the process, to help work out any kinks or problems we see before they happen, and really encourage these things to take place with a positive impact on the downtown area. And I think with our involvement and our leadership in this, that we can help activate more events, more activity, and do it in a way that has a strong economic impact for the downtown area, because that's what we want to encourage, to use these events as a tool to promote and to help the businesses in the downtown area be successful. So definitely step up our role in advocating for these and part of this new process.
So back to the special use permit. It probably makes sense citywide to limit a location to four events per year, but it probably doesn't make sense to downtown, where we're really trying to encourage and facilitate events. Downtown just has some unique needs. And so what we are suggesting is that we eliminate the requirement of a special use permit for what we're referring to as the pedestrian overlay area of the downtown district, which is from First Street to First Avenue and Country Club to Centennial. Then we also have a little bit of a jog out down to 2nd Avenue, because there is an area down here that the MAC uses for overflow parking, and that sometimes is used for the parades, for staging areas and things like that. And then we also have the United Methodist Church over here, and they have a lot of events and things as well, so we figured we should include them in this at this point. But we didn't, you know, while we want to eliminate the special use permit, what we don't want to do is eliminate that appeal process to make sure that we still have checks and balances. So a secondary part of the solution is to really strengthen and streamline the special event licensing, that secondary thing that we were talking about. And this is overseen by tax and license. First and foremost, as available and upon request, the Downtown Mesa Association has said that they would be willing to be available to provide guidance, advocacy, you know, help plan people who are planning events, fill out their application and go through the process so that it's more seamless and they understand it and it's clear. So that's more of a proactive element and really appreciated. And then secondly, we would continue to have an informal cross-departmental review and approval process, but we'd like to add someone from the Mesa Arts Center. One of the things that Cindy Ornstein, in her leadership at the Mesa Arts Center, is trying to do is have a whole lot more connection and relationship to the events in downtown Mesa. And so by having someone from her staff on that review team, they'll know exactly what's being planned, and we'll be able to find some of those synergies and events. And then also a member from the Downtown Mesa Association staff.
Councilmember Summers?
A question on the map before it gets too far ahead. You mentioned the bump out to the south.
Mm-hmm.
There's a church there, and that they have some events. What I'm concerned about is that we're singling out this particular church because of its proximity to the downtown area, because there are churches throughout the city that throw events, and they benefit the church, and they're great. For that matter, the temple isn't too far from here, and the temple throws several events a year that everybody's invited to. I think the lights are starting, if they haven't already. And that's, I don't think that's included, is it, in this area? No. So I'm a little concerned about why we're singling out this one particular church. Are they throwing events that are benefiting the downtown area, or are we granting a special privilege to this particular church just because of its proximity?
Well, and our focus has really been to provide a focus for where we want events. And what we have done with the pedestrian overlay area is identified an area where we think there's the most retail, the business retail, because the focus of these events is really about bringing people downtown and activating downtown, but also helping those businesses down there be successful. The bump out really became more of not so much about the church itself, but more about the lot for the MAC. We can change that if that's what the council wants to do. But the wider we get, the more residential that you pull into that area, and it could create some conflicts.
Yeah. Councilman Kavanaugh has a comment.
Yeah, and thank you, Mayor. I can also provide some institutional history for this particular lot, or that the First United Methodist Church built a community center, and the city was a partner in that as a downtown development project with community development block grant funds being spent for that, with the intention and the thought that that site would be used for public events, not just church community events. And so that's, I think, another reason why for the cutout, because when that concept and proposal was brought to the city, the idea was that we're providing community development block grant monies for a downtown event location and venue, and not just church funds.
Well, let me ask you this. Does drawing the lines here accomplish our purposes? Does drawing the lines the way we have here accomplish our purposes? Okay, then I don't know what the discussion is.
So why didn't we include the Mesa Amphitheater?
The Mesa Amphitheater is a special events facility,
okay,
and so they don't have to get a special use permit.
And doesn't that go along with that church, too? Isn't it? Can't they put on any events they want in their own parking lot without so?
Is that the same for churches throughout the city?
Yeah.
Okay. Then it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
All right.
That's what I'm saying. It's really a non-issue.
Right.
The special events basically allow anything that's related to the church activities themselves. We don't count those. If they start getting into the parking lot, that's when the special event ordinance kicks in, because then they're using the area, their parking lot area, in a manner that's different than what it's designed to do. It's supposed to be a parking lot that serves the facilities.
Here's the deal. This is getting into, once again, the micromanaging, because we're getting ridiculous. Because what we're saying is if we move this line here, we can't park cars on the left side of the road versus the right side of the road because it's not included in the permit area, and that's ridiculous. Make the lines where you need it to accomplish the purposes for downtown events, and I'm happy with
that. Then it's a public use. Then it makes sense.
Dave.
I was curious because I was thinking about the Veterans Day Parade where we go up and down Center Street.
Well, that's why it's included. That's why it notched out to make sure that the big parking lot on South Center.
Do we go far enough north, though? Because they stage early and then they finish.
But this doesn't prohibit you from having a special event.
Okay, I'm just trying. That's why we're asking questions. I don't think we're micromanaging. I think we're just trying to understand.
Yeah, but we're not prohibiting other special events from happening around the city. We're just saying this area will create a separate process and probably for having events and allow events to happen a lot more frequently than the four that are limited.
Yeah, it only kicks in when you have multiple. It really kicks in when you have multiple events.
Right. Right now it's limited to four.
Yeah, single events operate on their own.
So all those other events, whether it's a parade, they're only going to maybe happen, three or four times a year?
Well, it won't be included in the aggregate of all these events happening in downtown.
It's a different group. No. This isn't events. This is events by
group. It's not location, it's group. Is that what we're trying to get?
It's events per location, so it is aggregate.
Well, it is location, so.
Well, okay. No, wait a second. Let's get clear on that. So does that mean that the Veterans Day Parade and those are included as events? So, and that's fine. If the idea is to just handle all events, regardless of who shows up, through the same process, which is to streamline that process to make sure that if it's the MLK or the Veterans or DMA or Downtown or whoever it is shows up, that it's a streamlined process and it... Well,
correct.
Okay. All right. That's fine. That's good.
Okay, and so the special events approval team will add a couple of elements to that, and then we would make it mandatory for newer events. We would make it mandatory for annual events. And for the ongoing events, what we would try to do is once we get to a place where the team has really approved their model, if you want to use that word, we would look for a way to streamline further because, you know, ultimately what our goal is, Mayor and Council, is to get out of the way and to cut through some of this bureaucratic red tape so that we're helping them be successful and have their events downtown because that helps
Motorcycles on Main is a monthly event or 8, 9, 10, whatever amount they want to do it.
Right.
You set up a program, it works, the template works, the production works. Why have to recreate the wheel every time you want to do it, especially
precisely.
If you want to go beyond that floor? You just say, okay, listen, you're going to do the same thing you did last time, boom, here you go, have fun.
Yes,
okay.
And we have already done that for Motorcycles on Main, working through tax and license. The secondary team, and we're calling it a downtown stakeholder solutions team, is we want it to be solutions-oriented, but this will only be convened on hopefully those rare occasions where there's some kind of an outstanding issue, unresolved issue that can't be taken care of at that first team level. Our hope is that 98% of the events just go through that first team and everything's good and we're ready to go. But if there's something that just really requires more stakeholder involvement or has a policy implication, we'll pull this team together.
This is, and I hate to use this word, but this is basically an appeals type thing.
Exactly.
Can't solve it here. We got to go to another group to try and solve it.
So this is what we're trying to say is instead of having a board of adjustment process, let's have a less formal, more solutions-oriented stakeholder. Yeah.
Because the board of adjustments is left with few options. They basically have to say either yes or no, and if they say yes, it's generally adding some very specific stipulations,
yes.
Which is what happened in the last one, which aren't really fun for anybody.
Exactly.
And may or may not truly address the issue or solve the problem.
Yes.
Okay.
So what we're here today to ask the council is this a step in the right direction? And generally what we're asking for your advice on is we want to, again, have a strengthened role for the DMA as a resource and a centralized source of information. We want to move forward with an special use permit exemption for downtown events, the area that I showed you. And we want to start using a more improved or facilitated staff review team process. Those three elements are what we're asking you for your opinions and direction on today.
Okay. Councilmember Pinter.
Love what I'm hearing. One of my favorite phrases from Councilmember Richens is facilitators, not regulators. And that's been a theme through these years, and this is just another great step in a process to achieve that. But I also want to just take a minute to thank Mr. John Richards for the long, long hours of service that's been provided in organizing events downtown. My family's been the beneficiary of it. Thousands of people have been the beneficiaries of that. And it really meets what I think I hear from this council is the goal to increase the activities and the events and putting people downtown. So, Mr. Richards, thank you so much for all your good work. And thank you. I think this is a great move in the right direction.
Other questions? I'd like to echo what Councilman Fenter said, and John is in the audience. Thank you. You know, people asked him about all the bad things going on downtown. I says, wait a second. We're arguing over the fact we have too many successful events. What a wonderful problem to have. You know, we wouldn't have been having this discussion 2 years ago because we didn't have these events. And so much has been done by the efforts of a lot of people. John, thank you for bringing an energy and some success. You know, and these successes build upon each other. You know, whether it be Motorcycles on Main or Second Fridays or MacFest, which then culminates in something like the Celebration of Freedom. There's been huge changes in downtown. And, you know, we're gearing up to the time when the big change comes, which is light rail coming downtown. We're going to be very well positioned. I love dealing with these kind of problems. They're good problems, but they're still problems. I appreciate the approach you've taken, which is a solutions-generated approach. It's also a non-governmental. It's like a self-regulating, and truly, David, thank you for being here. Thank you for coming here, because I think it comes at a good time when DMA has gone through a transition, and it's a time for a good, fresh start for everybody, but from a much higher level than where we were before. I mean, fresh starts are wonderful. Generally, they happen when things have gone really bad and you're trying to reconstruct or to correct issues. I mean, here, we're starting from a pretty good plane, and that's a great place to start from. And I have every confidence that David can lead DMA and work with us to bring parties together who, you know, frankly, historically have had troubles working together. Like I said, I see nothing but a bright future for downtown. There's been a lot of good going on down there, and hopefully it can even get better. So thank you.
Thank you. Then with council concurrence, then what we will do is bring the special use permit exemption to the council through the normal zoning ordinance update that Gordon is doing and that is planned. I think he said in his schedule that...
Does that work for your timing?
It does.
Well, we'll have to look at it as long as it doesn't.
I know there's still a lot of issues the council wants to work out on the zoning code update.
Yeah,
we need to make sure that timeline doesn't hinder opportunities for events downtown.
I would, my personal preference,
bring it separately.
Yeah,
this
is important.
Move ahead now.
An
emergency clause.
This is a 3-month emergency.
We will consider that.
And then what will we do in this pass? We'll go out in the street with what? Our sparklers again.
Gyrate
with your sparklers. No, I would prefer that because I'm afraid it'll get... There are other bigger issues with the zoning, and we don't know if those are going to... how those are going to play out. I would prefer, and unless there's a problem, that you bring it back as quickly as you can.
Okay.
You know, let's strike while the iron's hot. It's and we got the momentum right now. Let's make it happen right now.
That's good. Just another addition. Is there any way that, you know, how these groups have little beer garden areas and they have to come in? Is there any way DMA can get an overlay liquor license for all the different events that they are working with? So
that's state law.
State law. I mean, they could put
by location.
No, you actually already have some restaurants that have liquor licenses that are doing beer gardens, and that may be adequate for what we need downtown.
Well, but that, once again, I don't know that we may write the rules
no.
on that. That's a state law.
But no, I'm saying, but they already have it, and they can already do it, so we may not even have to address that issue because you already have a few places.
We still need to address every time there's an event, we still need to approve it because they need to get the license from the liquor department. So that's not going to change regardless of what we do here, correct?
If they already have it, though.
What's the state
change? Well, even if they don't. Like, you know.
We'll move forward under the current state law.
That works out.
Yeah, we'll make it all work.
Out. Okay. All righty.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Acknowledge receipts of minutes, boards and committees. Have a motion from the Vice Mayor, second Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Hear reports on conferences attended. Councilmember Richens.
Hey, last Saturday I had the opportunity to participate with an organization called the Food Allergy and Anaphylactic Network. They had a walk for a fundraiser. I'm a sufferer of food allergies, so they were akin to my heart to see all the people there that deal with that and all the kids too that suffer under food allergies. And so I just wanted to hold up the t-shirt. They had a really successful walk. It attracted more participants than San Francisco and Los Angeles's walk, and they raised about $35,000 for research for food allergies. And it was a really neat event. I think they're planning on doing it again next year. But I brought a shirt for the mayor to put in his collection. He didn't have enough for all you guys, or I would have brought you one. But it was a great organization. Glad to see they're successful.
Thank you. Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to report on two events. Tuesday night, we had the District 3 Building Stronger Neighborhoods kickoff meeting. And I'm really proud to report that District 3, once again, like Alex's district, turns out record numbers. We had, I think, almost 100 people at the event from the Carriage Lane neighborhood, which is about 400 homes. Very enthusiastic, very positive audience signing up for the various action teams, and it's a very, very productive start to that process. Yesterday was another event that was the completion of a process that started last month. We hosted a pancake breakfast in District 3 last month, and we asked our residents and community to bring new toys for Cardin Children's Hospital, and we were able to deliver those toys yesterday to the hospital. To many of the kids who were able to come down from their rooms, and we were aided by Santa Claus, who actually lives in District 3. He lives in Marlboro Mesa. He's a reverse snowbird. He's here most of the year, and later this month he's heading up to the North Pole. But he came with us and rode in the antique fire truck to Cardin Children's Hospital. And what happened with the toy drive wouldn't have been possible without the assistance from the Fire Connector program. So I really want to extend a special thank you to Chief Beck and the Fire Connectors for helping with the toys, helping yesterday. And it's a great, I think, partnership between the residents of District 3 and the Children's Hospital. So thank you to everyone involved.
Thank you. Vice Mayor.
Yes, yesterday several of us were out at Rural Metro's headquarters to celebrate their 60 years in Arizona and the great work they do, Southwest Ambulance. Been great participants in the city helping to sponsor a number of things, safe swimming. They helped sponsor our freedom celebration. So it was a great event, and congratulations to Rural Metro.
Thank you. All right. Once again, thanks, Councilmember-elect Glover, for being here.
Any meetings or conferences attended? Yeah.
Nope.
Not yet.
I appreciate you sitting over there. You sparkled the entire meeting.
Thank you. You're smoking.
You're on fire. Okay, anything else? Mr. Brady.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Just remind the Mayor and Council and everyone in the community, we have this Saturday, December 11th, a household hazardous waste collection event from 8 a.m. to noon at our North Center Street location. We also, this Saturday and Sunday, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., we'll have the Mesa Arts Festival at the Mesa Arts Center. Where there'll be original works of art for sale, entertainment, and live artists. We also remind the council that Monday, December 13th, we'll have a community and neighborhood services committee meeting at 3:30, which will be followed by a study session and council meeting. And then our next study session will be December 16th at 7:30. At this time, I'd like to invite Candace and Chuck, if they'd come forward. Mayor and Council, today I'll be announcing to the organization some changes. We are today, or well, effective Monday, I'll be appointing Candace Canestaro as our acting budget director. So Candace will be leading the budget for this next cycle, and Chuck will become an executive manager. And one of the main responsibilities Chuck will have, as you know, one of the most critical things, elements that we're doing right now in this organization, which is going to be a huge change, is converting our entire financial system to the City Edge program. And Chuck will be spending majority of his time on that project. Chuck has how many years of service with the city? 24 years of service with the city, and having that input into that system as we set it up and transition it is critically important. So we want to make sure he has the time and focus on that. Candace has been with the city and the budget department for 11 years, and is very capable of taking on these new responsibilities. So I just want to introduce, I think you've met Candace before, but knowing that she will be taking the reins of the budget department as the acting budget director starting Monday.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is that congratulations. He's taking the reins. No,
she's
trying to forget.
Brian,
no.
Well, we'll look forward to you act as the budget director in an acting temporary permanent role. Permanently temporary role, whatever it is. Okay. Councilman Cavanaugh, you had something else?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that tomorrow morning we have another District 3 event. We're hosting coffee from 7:30 to 8:30. Southwest Ambulance is being the host this time. This is an event we are starting to do every other month. Chief Harry Beck will be our guest, and he will be talking about volunteer opportunities with the fire department. But I wanted to thank Southwest Ambulance for being the host, and for our residents who go there, they're also going to provide a tour of the facility. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Ms. Crocker, any requests to speak?
No request, Mayor.
Move for adjournment.
I have a motion to adjourn from the Vice Mayor, second from Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. We are adjourned.